Welcome to The Happy Writer. This is a podcast that aims to bring readers more books to enjoy and help authors find more joy in their writing. I am your host, Marissa Meyer. Thank you so much for joining me today. One thing making me happy this week, honey butter potato chips. Have you guys heard about these? I am new. I am admittedly very new to the whole like Korean snack food phenomenon. But there are these chips that come from Korea. And as many of you know, my mom is like a huge fan of the K-pop band BTS. And they have been nominated for 3 awards at this year's American Music Awards, which is happening this weekend. I know it will all be like over and done with by the time the episode is posted. But anyway, my mom and I decided to host a little get together to watch the show and cheer for BTS. And we thought, oh, wouldn't it be fun to go down to our local Korean supermarket and pick up some snacks to serve at the party? And so we did that a few days ago. And now I am obsessed with these honey butter potato chips. They are quite possibly the most amazing thing I have ever put into my mouth. If you have never tried them, definitely, you can order them online or go check out your local international market if you have one. Get yourself some. You won't regret it. They are so good. Of course, I am also so happy to be talking to today's guests. Today, we are welcoming Amanda Foody, who is the author of a number of young adult and middle grade novels, including the Shadow Game series, the Wilderlore series, and more. We also have Christine Lynn Herman, who is the YA author of The Devouring Grey Duology and The Drowning Summer. Their co-written debut, All of Us Villains, came out on November 9th. It was an instant bestseller and was also selected as Amazon's best YA book of the year. Please welcome Amanda Foody and Christine Lynn Herman.
Hi, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, we're so excited to be here.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining me. And congratulations on the book coming out, hitting the New York Times list, being Amazon's number one. It's all so exciting. How are you feeling?
oh my gosh. Like, we are still on a roller coaster that has not quite stopped.
Yeah, that's a great way of thinking about it. We're on a pretty intense deadline for Villains 2 right now, so it's been kind of comforting to be like, it's okay, we just have to go back to work.
Right.
All of that stuff we'll sink in later.
Yes, I know exactly what that's like to try to be promoting a book and also like celebrating, oh, I have a book out, it's this huge accomplishment, but also at the same time, deadlines are always looming and you're like, but I also have to write this thing. Are you finding time to kind of just celebrate and take it all in?
Yeah, we're actually celebrating tonight. And to be clear, like, I'm so excited that this all happened. I'm so proud of all the work that we did. It's wild. You know, publishing is such a brutal industry sometimes, so that when you get a win, you're almost like you have to pinch yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Plus, I feel like even though we are sneaking in sometimes to celebrate, it does help that both of us know that about 2 weeks from now, I'm actually getting married. And yeah, all of our other author friends are going to be there. So it is going to be, I think, quite the festive occasion altogether.
I can't wait.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I bet this has been just a complete whirlwind of a year for you.
Yeah, I have to admit, being on 2 deadlines at once while having a book release, while being a month away from my wedding, has been an overlapping that I definitely did not plan, but I still have been having a lot of fun about it.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I got married about 2 months before the launch of my very first novel, and I remember it just being like, what is happening in my life right now? There's like so many plates up in there at any given time.
Yeah, I feel like all of the adults who have been warning me ever since we got engaged that wedding planning is a very intense but fun nightmare, They were all correct. They were all correct.
Great way to put it.
It's a great way to put it.
Yeah. I feel like you've kind of scarred me from a distance. I got engaged this fall, so I'm like, I'm beginning as you end. And I'm like, oh no, I know it's coming.
Well, congrats to both of you in that case. There's just like good news all around.
Yeah.
Yeah. This has been a very, very happy fall. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's so wonderful. I want to start the official interview here by asking each of you, what is your author origin story? How did you know you wanted to be a writer, or what were the steps you took to get published? Kind of, how did it happen for you?
I can go first. So I wanted to be...
Would you like to say who you are so people can put the name to the voice?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I'm Amanda, and I have wanted to be a writer for as long as I can remember. Pretty much as soon as I learned to read, I wanted to write books as well. And I also was very determined not to put off this dream for very long. I wrote voraciously all through elementary, middle, and high school. I remember being 11 years old and going to my local library and checking out one of those guides to literary agents that they used to publish, like an actual print. And it was this massive, massive phone book-like tome. And I would take notes on it because, you know, my sixth grade self really thought that that was happening for me soon. And so I wrote a lot over the course of high school, and then it was around the time that I was applying to colleges when I feel like a lot of those questions rolling around me were, you know, where do you want to go to school? What do you want to do for life? What do you want to major in? And I was really overwhelmed, and because all I wanted to do at that time was write, and I had other ideas for things that interested me, but they didn't suit me the way that writing always felt like it had. And so that was sort of the crossroads where I really threw myself into it. I ended up signing with my first agent halfway through my freshman year of school. And then I, after a series of various ups and downs, submissions that failed, switching agents, you know, kind of long story short, I ended up signing with my first publisher for my debut novel, my senior year of school, and it came out about a year after I graduated. And yeah, it's been a few years since then, and had a few other books come out since then, and that's pretty much been the journey to date.
I love the visual of you at 11 years old with those, that huge, because I had one of those, like, it was like Publisher's Marketplace or something like that.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, and I had one on my shelf from back when I was early 20s probably, and I just got rid of it a couple months ago. I was like, why am I still hanging on to this? Probably half the people in this book aren't even in the business anymore.
Right. I really fancied myself some kind of Matilda.
All right, Christine, what is your story?
So I made Amanda go first because she's part of my writer origin story, but first we should rewind because in a very similar vein, I was also a kid who was determined to be an author pretty much from when I first learned how to read. I wrote my first novel when I was 6. It was about a squirrel who hibernates, wakes up, is like, no, thank you, and goes back to sleep. Squirrels do not hibernate. I still feel like it's probably my best work. But in all seriousness.
Pause for a second. How long was this novel?
It was illustrated. It had pictures. I do not think it was very long. I was a little kid. This girl had like giant cartoon eyes for the full effect. But I really, really wanted this, and I knew that it was like my big dream. But my parents were very practical, and they were like, you know, if you can picture yourself doing anything else, you should probably do that, which I do think is good advice. However, I was like, I really can't picture myself doing anything else. So when I went to college, I had already written, I think like about, yeah, I had written 2 full novels and trunked them. I never got brave enough to query like Amanda did, because I knew, I was just like, I know these are garbage. And I decided that I would try to basically pursue like a more practical avenue of a day job and keep writing on the side. But that wasn't what wound up happening. The more school I did, the more I realized that like I just wanted to be around books, even if I wasn't writing them. So after college, I wound up getting a job in publishing, just not, you know, on the side of it that was the writing side. And while there are plenty of people who like kind of wear both hats on either side of the publishing gate, it was not for me. And I wound up leaving to write full-time eventually after a few years and after I sold a book. But to rewind back to that summer after college, when I first got my first job in publishing, I also entered a contest called Pitch Wars, which is still going on today and is a great way to get a foot in the publishing door, where unagented writers submit manuscripts for potential consideration by mentors who are either agented or published authors. And it just so happened that I flung my book in Amanda's direction and she liked it. And that's how we met and became friends. And also how I wound up revising what would eventually become my debut novel. And like through Pitch Wars and that process, getting my agent. So Amanda is part of my origin story. After all of that, The Devouring Grey came out in like 2019. And I guess I've now published two books since then. I've got more coming. I feel really grateful that I get to do this and this is my job. I know that I've been really lucky.
I love that. I love how your two stories kind of came together. It feels very serendipitous.
I agree.
Yeah, it's funny because once we first started talking to each other and realized how much we had in common, we also realized that had we not met each other through that mentorship program, there were about half a dozen ways that we had very nearly crossed paths. So it probably would have been inevitable. Mm-hmm.
I love that. It was fated all along. Okay, so you have this dream of being a writer. You eventually get an agent. You get your first number of books published. You two meet, become friends. At some point, that develops into the book that we're talking about today, All of Us Villains. First of all, would you please tell listeners a little bit about this book? And then I am so curious to know, how did it come about? Who had the idea? Who was like, let's write a book together? What was the process there?
So All of Us Villains is a fantasy story that takes place in the city of Ilvernath. And for most of its history, Ilvernath has had a very dark and bloody secret, which is that every generation, its seven oldest families send a champion among them to compete in a tournament to the death. And the winner earns their family exclusive control of a very, very powerful form of magic. What makes the tournament different in the book is that this is the very, very first tournament in history where suddenly the whole world actually knows about it. And that's because of the publication of a recent, very salacious tell-all book that has exposed Ilvernath to international ire. The book follows four of this year's seven champions, all of whom are very, very terrible people, yet in their own way, still very lovable. And we get to see them deal with the fact that they are both champions in a battle royale and whether they like it or not, international celebrities.
Yep. You're much better at pitching it than I am.
I was kind of wondering, do you take turns pitching or because it seemed
no, like I make her do it.
Oh no, I was like, well, that'll be me.
But in terms of how we wound up co-writing, obviously we had already worked together really closely, first on my book because Amanda was my mentor, and then we just turned into critique partners, which for listeners who may not know what that is, it's writers who like trade chapters or just entire manuscripts and give each other feedback. It's a really, really great way to learn a lot about craft and make like really valuable and important writerly friendship connections, which is what happened to both of us. So we had been friends and critique partners for about a year when we kind of were having this conversation via GChat at our respective day jobs about young adult tropes that we both loved and about the books that like we had loved reading when we were teenagers. And we brought up, I think it was Amanda who first brought up that she was like, I love death tournaments. And I was like, I also love death tournaments. And I don't remember who said it first, but it became clear very quickly that it was like, I've kind of always wanted to write a book like this. So have I. What if we wrote it together? What if we tried? Do you think we could do that? The answer obviously was yes, we did. But that makes it sound a lot simpler than it was in practice, I guess. But that's where it got started.
I love that. Okay, so I just have to throw out that I absolutely love this book. I think it is so deserving of all of the accolades it's receiving. There was a time, I think it was like two nights ago, and I was halfway through reading the book and I woke up in the middle of the night and then could not get back to sleep for like 2 hours. So I was just lying in bed thinking about this story and these characters. And it is one of those books that just digs its way into, at least it dug its way into my imagination. And I loved it. And I can't wait for book two.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. That's so nice to hear.
So you have this idea. Let's try this fun thing and co-write a book together about a death tournament. Where did you go from there? Like, do you live close to each other? Did you meet up and have an afternoon of brainstorming, or like, what? How did it develop?
I guess we could begin with a very special shout out to Google Docs, because for the vast majority of the process of co-writing All of Us Villains, we did not actually live in the same city. We didn't live far from each other. Christine was based in New York while I was based in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, our communication was taking place via text, occasional phone calls, and lots of G-chat and Google Doc planning. Yeah, I would say that was the beginning of it logistically. It did come together pretty quickly, wouldn't you say, Christine?
Yeah, I would say so. We got the idea in like the summer, early fall of 2017, and we had a first draft like 2 months later.
What?
Both of us are kind
of
intense.
Hold on. You got the idea and you had a first draft done 2 months later? Is that what you just said?
Yep.
Amanda and I
think sort of have like this weird ability to fast track a brainstorming process when we put our heads together. It's definitely not like that for me solo, and I don't think it's like that for Amanda either. But
no,
something about talking, passing an idea back and forth with another person makes it grow way faster than it would by yourself. And it generates like twice as much material and stuff to get excited about. So we just kind of had like more juice, I don't know. And we just wanted to jump right in. So we moved fast, at least in the beginning.
I also feel like our mutual excitement also creates a lot of momentum, because I don't know, usually when I come up with an idea, of course I'm really, really excited about it, and I usually tend to kind of throw myself into them with a lot of exhilaration, but I always end up running out of steam. But nothing really can kind of get that steam going again when I have somebody else going, no, I thought of something else, I have to tell you about it.
Yeah, I feel like we both kind of pushed each other. Like when one person would be kind of like flagging, like, oh, I don't know, is this silly? The other person would be like, no, it's not. We're going to make
it's
it
amazing.
So how much of that time was actually spent planning? And did you go into the writing process with an outline, or are you both more pantsers? How did you divide the work? I'm so curious. I want to write a book in 2 months with a really fun writing partner. How do I make this happen?
We did outline it ahead of time, because with co-writing, it really required us to make sure that our visions were aligned before we started. Mm-hmm. And so if we had attempted to pants the book, we could have easily found ourselves in that situation where we go through and then we read the other person's chapters and go, oh no.
That's not what I was planning at all. Things. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was a lot of outlining involved. I am a lifelong plotter. And I think at this point I have converted Christine to my dark ways.
Yeah, I when I first started writing and when I wrote my debut novel, I was like a true pantser. I would just sit down and kind of go for it. But that had already been changing, and it certainly wasn't an option for this book. So I was like, all right, I'll see what this outlining thing is all about, Amanda. I guess I'll take a look. What actually wound up happening is that we threw large chunks of the outline out when I kept being like, can we go do this instead? And Amanda was very patient with me about it. I think we kind of both merged our processes together to some degree. I think you won more on the plotting part and I won more on the character part, which is a nice compromise because I think it made the book better because Amanda is like a master with Excel and stuff like that. And I never could have like, it helped me reconfigure how I understood story structure. And I don't know, I feel like logistically, we also, in addition to the outline, we also needed to figure out the character breakdown. Obviously there are four main characters and we each wrote two of the POVs and no, we will not tell you who, and we will not let you guess. Nobody is allowed to know.
That does answer. I had figured that you each took two POVs. I guess I won't ask because what would be the point? But that's, yeah, no, that's interesting. Okay, I'm sorry, keep going.
Yeah, I mean, well, we like to keep it a secret because we don't want to break the immersion. And also because we've both been through every chapter so many times that like it doesn't really matter. But yeah, when we had the characters figured out and we had their roles and the outline figured out, the drafting went pretty fast just because there had been so much stuff that we needed to get through before we actually put words down on the page.
Mm-hmm. So how much time do you think you spent creating that outline and developing the characters versus how much time to actually write that draft?
I would say that the drafting process definitely took longer. The overall planning process was probably something that happened over the course of weeks. The other reality of All of Us Villains is that we revised it and rewrote it for years before it went on submission.
Okay. So that now you initial, tell me.
that first draft wasn't very good.
That initial version, I would say, is pretty much only a fraction of what the book is now, which is definitely very much thanks to our agents. But I would say that one of the big things with the plotting process, both upfront and then over the course of every revision, is that we were really, really purposeful about a lot of aspects of the story. You know, going into it, we knew we wanted to tackle this really famous trope of the death tournament, the magic system, the way we wove in things like fairy tales as a theme, storytelling as a theme, all of the different characters. All of our decisions really came from a reason, because I felt like every single decision we made, we kind of had to first rationalize to each other. We couldn't just instantaneously go, I like this idea. We had to say, this is why we like this idea. So yeah, it was a very decisive plotting process. I think much more organized and cohesive than I have ever managed to do solo.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, I'm obviously hearing a ton of benefits to having a co-writer. Do you feel like there are any cons to having a co-writer or any like particular challenges that come with it?
Google Docs doesn't like long books with lots of comments on them.
Technology.
Honestly, I can only think of two and they're pretty darn slight. I would say the first one was definitely one that we encountered a lot up front in our planning our publication process and that we still have to deal with today, which is simply just, we have to organize it around the schedules of both of us as opposed to one person. And that just takes a lot of juggling and a lot of communication and it is tricky, but it's one of those necessary evils and we don't mind doing it, obviously. And I would say the only other time is that you would think that when there's two people writing a book, it only means 50% of the work. And sometimes I feel like we really do get off easy because the other person is there to fill in a lot of the work for us. However, there is a lot of time spent going over each other's chapters and making sure that the visions are aligned, that the characters feel cohesive no matter who is writing them. It's a writing process that I think takes more editing than a typical writing process might. So I don't know. I personally love the editing process. So for me, this isn't even really a con. But I think for a writer who might prefer drafting, they might find that uniquely tricky.
Yeah, I also love editing. And I also really love editing with Amanda. We had already done it before to each other's chapters. And so there was like a lot of trust there. And so it felt really good to like have her as a perpetual second opinion. Mm-hmm. So I guess What?
Oh, I was going to say, that's true. That's one con, is that now there's somebody who has seen our, like, my writing at its absolute worst.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I think that is a con.
Somebody knows my secrets and dirty laundry.
I can imagine, because I hate sharing my work before I've been over it like 3 or 4 times. How hard was it in the very beginning to like, okay, I wrote this chapter an hour ago. It's a mess, but here, take a look.
It was really hard.
Did it get easier?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely. Now a lot of our text conversations actually are just, hey, the chapter I wrote today is bad. Don't judge me. And then the other person is like, are you kidding? Did you read the one I wrote before it?
And we'll like purposefully leave nice comments on chapters that we know the other one is insecure about, being like, look, this part's good, which is really cute.
That's so sweet. Do you have, for people or for authors who might be considering co-writing, or maybe they're in the middle of a co-writing project, any tips?
Yeah, I would say it's really important that you like have a lot of trust and collaboration like ready in your head. Like you have to kind of, when you're the only author on a project and it's a solo endeavor, you can do whatever you want to that book on that page. You can make whatever giant decisions to like slash the plot and do it all over again, to cut whole characters and arcs and subplots. You have to be prepared to talk all of that through with another person. And that means you need to really trust everything that person has to say. And you also have to listen to them if they say something that you might not initially agree with. You can't always win.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would definitely say the same thing. A lot of times when we talk about the book, it doesn't even feel right to say that, oh, like, you know, we brought in elements of each of our individual works, because even though we kind of did, this book doesn't feel like something that was 50% Amanda and 50% Christine. It feels like something that was 100% completely new. So it just feels like it's a different process than writing solo. And even if you might think that, oh, this is everything you're bringing to the table, basically the meal is going to completely change around you once you sit down to eat.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a really good way of thinking about it. And I also just think like co-writing is intense, and it's okay to like, you need to be able to set boundaries like with yourself and with each other. I don't know. I feel like friendships can be like, I don't know. Friendship is hard enough when you're not literally doing the world's most intense group project together. You got to be prepared. You got to know that you can like stand the test, you know, which obviously we did. And I think we're actually closer for it, but it's a gamble.
Mm-hmm. So you obviously had an outline and a plan for the book before you started writing, but this is a duology. Did you have a plan for the whole series, or were you like, well, let's get to this point and we'll evaluate from there?
We had we knew the ending point of the story, and we knew that the ending point was not a true finale, that there was definitely an after, a very distinct before and after, which is why it did always feel like a 2-book story. As far as how much we knew about the sequel, we had a kind of vague vision of what each of the characters' story arcs would probably be focused on thematically. But now that we're actually neck deep in editing that sequel, I'm wondering if we had any plan whatsoever.
We did have an outline and we threw it in the garbage. Which is okay. Sometimes that happens, even the best laid plans. But definitely, like, I think I definitely thought that we had like a better handle on the sequel than we did on like the first book when we initially sat down to write it. And now I really don't think that's true. I think we're still kind of like, we're like, oh my gosh, there's all this other stuff that we're doing that I'm really happy we're doing and that I'm really proud of, but that's like nothing like what I thought it was going to be.
Mm.
Yeah, it makes me really thankful that both of us have written sequels before, because mm-hmm. I feel like it's one of those things that I think every writer who's written a sequel has at some point encountered, that you think you might know what you're doing and you think you've plotted it all out and you've had it in your head this long, and then you inevitably encounter these huge hurdles. And I'm just so glad that it wasn't either of our first time, because it is always brutal.
Yeah. And also, I'm really glad I don't have to do it by myself.
Yeah, you're pretty much describing my second book process, like for every series. I have a plan. Oh, it all completely fell apart. Okay, I want to switch gears a little bit and go into kind of more nitty-gritty craft talk, starting with the magic system, which you, I think, Christine, you already kind of mentioned a little bit about. But the magic system in this world is extremely complicated, or at least it felt very complicated from a reader's perspective. And I mean, it's just chock full of history and like all of these details. There's different spells and curses, and they have different levels, and you know, there's different kinds of magic and objects and places, and it all works really beautifully. But as I was reading, I was wondering, like, do you have a like a magic, almost like a story Bible in place that the two of you can refer to? Or like, how do you keep it all straight? And how did you kind of develop it to begin with?
A story Bible would be nice. Where can I get one of those?
Yeah, right? We forgot to work on that. No, I think the truth is that we both love world building, and we both love tackling really ambitious like world building concepts. And so we went all in here. And I'm really proud of what we did, but it is really complicated. It was complicated to manage. We had a glossary of all of the spells and curses that are used in the book, and we kept track of like which character had which one. And in terms of like the different kinds of magical objects, which are called relics and landmarks, and are, without getting too into spoilers, are things you can find in the Death Tournament. We also like knew what each of those were and like what they could do. But a lot of the world building, I realized both of us kind of hold in our heads. Like we implicitly understand it. We don't have to go over it. Unless sometimes we run into like a stuff that's a little like, oh, I thought about it this way and you thought about it that way, but we don't really need to, which is wild as I say it. What do you think, Amanda?
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. We are both total world building geeks, even in our own individual books, that I feel like when you just throw us together, chaos ensues. Slightly organized chaos, I like to think, but chaos nonetheless.
It's funny because I kind of feel like that's a theme for the book. Like you throw all these magical ingredients together and chaos ensues. Mm-hmm. And two, because I was thinking about it and it's like, so you do have this very complex system, but at the start of the book, I mean, it seems all very laid out, very structured, like there's a clear logic to how it works. And yet as the story is going on, things start to fall apart and they're, you know, we can start to see how there are cracks in this curse, you know, that's being held over this town. And as things start to fall apart, the magic kind of starts to go bonkers a little bit. And I have a feeling we're going to be seeing a huge fallout from that in book two. But that just makes me, I mean, just to me, that feels like, okay, we set up all of these grand, brilliant rules for this very structured magic system. And now we're just like tossing our hands up in the air. And like, do you still have rules that you're trying to follow? Or are you just kind of like going along with the story?
We definitely still have rules that we're trying our best to follow. It's actually, you've pretty much hit on a lot of the challenges that we've been facing in the second book is dealing with the intricacies of the magic system, because we have, with when you're juggling so many different point of view characters who all have their own individual arcs and storylines, and each of them have their own strengths and weaknesses when it comes to their ability as, you know, as magicians in this world. There's a lot of different aspects to touch on. And I think that's what we've been really struggling with juggling, because we've created something so big and complex, and we love that it's big and complex, but we want to make sure that everything gets to be explored and gets the resolution that it deserves.
Mm-hmm.
And we also knew that like making a bunch of rules and then breaking them would be challenging. But I do think thankfully we mostly understood how we wanted to break the rules. There have been a couple of things that have gotten away from us, but we've reined them in. It'll all be fine.
Do you ever regret any of the rules that you put in place?
Maybe.
there's like one or two things that both of us are like,
never again. It's funny because there are definitely some complexities that gave us headaches later, especially as we've been working on the sequel, have been uniquely challenging. However, I don't think either of us regret them per se, because we love the dimension that they added into the story. And even though figuring out them on a logistical level and making every little thread connect and everything feel cohesive, even though that can be really difficult, what it's been able to do for us in terms of exploring our characters and deepening the layer of the world, like, there was a reason that we were really into the ideas. There was a reason that we broke the magic system in very specific ways.
Yeah. And I mean, as you've said, Amanda, a lot of writing this book has been very intentional because it had to be. We had to talk everything through. And so I do feel that intent as we like try to tie things up. I realize like we really did do these things for a reason. And I feel like I've learned so much about world building and like the capabilities of what fantasy is and what it means and how you can kind of make magic work in all of these different ways from this book alone. And I know we've talked about how both of us feel like we've learned a lot from this. So I don't regret anything.
Yeah. No, I totally understand that. And I know for me, there have been so many times that, you know, I'll put some detail into my world building or magic system or whatever. And then 200 pages later, you're like, why did I do this thing? But it also like it forces you to do some problem solving. And I feel like a lot of times the best solutions and some of my favorite elements of a book come out of being forced to problem solve out of these things.
Definitely. Plus nothing beats the high of figuring out a solution and then you realize that it actually solves a bajillion problems that you had all at once in a really cool way.
That is so true. That's like the best writer feeling.
Yep.
We had a really special moment like that in All of Us Villains, where neither of us discussed a specific resolution to a plot thread, but we both independently figured it out. And like, I didn't even realize that I hadn't told Amanda. I just assumed she already knew. And I think vice versa. And we were both like, oh yeah, right. That's what we're doing. It was like this creepy brain mind meld. It was the solution that like tied everything together in a really cool way.
Oh, how cool. I love it. I want to know after we turn the recording off, because obviously we don't want to spoil anything, but I'd love to know what that is.
We'll tell you.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, let's talk about character and viewpoint. We've got champions. We've got seven champions. We get to be in the heads of four of them, our four protagonists. You're not going to tell me who wrote who, fine. But do you, like, I assume the two of you spent some time, like, figuring out the personalities for each character and kind of what was going to be driving them throughout the course of the story? Or do you each feel like you really have, like, the two that you wrote, you feel like you have more control over?
I would say that we initially, when we first figured out which characters we were each going to write and kind of roughly what they would be, we assigned them actually archetypes. There are a lot of fairy tale themes in the book. And so that's actually where we began. We said, oh, we want one champion from the family who always wins, and they're going to be terrible. They're going to be the villains of the story. We want, you know, one champion thus to feel like, you know, they're the hero. That's all they want. They want to be the hero, and then a champion from a family that's never won before. So we started with these really kind of grandiose ideas of what the characters would be. And then from that point onward, I would say the details of their personalities, those in particular, I think really did come down to who wrote which character. Those were choices that we made individually, because both of us love writing character. Even though we're both huge fantasy and world building buffs, we both feel so strongly and passionate about our characters, and we throw ourselves into so wholeheartedly that I think neither of us really wanted to step on each other's toes. We knew we would have too much fun with it, and we trusted each other too much. And then in terms of editing them and streamlining their arcs, we were definitely both involved all across the board. But the little quirks about who they are, I do think that that probably had more to do with the individual who conceived them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was really important, I think, to both of us to not make like it for as much as, you know, this book was a collaboration, we didn't want anyone to feel like they had to like take parts of a character away that like made them excited to write the character or made it feel like that character was special or important in the story. We both prioritized that, like we could both feel satisfied over like their arcs and what they were doing and where they were going. Mm-hmm. Even though sometimes that was a really tough balancing act because they all kind of butt heads.
Which is of course half the fun.
Yeah, I mean, characters who are all in a battle royale trying to kill each other, I would say that they butt heads occasionally. Yeah.
Time to time.
Were there, well, I guess I can't ask you guys this because you won't tell me. I was going to ask if there was any characters that you particularly enjoyed writing more than the others, but.
We could shout out some of the background characters.
Sure. Yeah. Who are your favorite background characters?
We both had a lot of fun writing the character of Reed McTavish.
I knew you were going to say him because he's so cool.
Yeah, we really love Reed.
Yeah, he's the kind of sneaky spellmaker / curse maker who is behind the scenes secretly pulling a lot of strings. We really had a lot of fun with him.
I also have a pretty big soft spot for Finley Blair because I love like a wounded, like trying to do the right thing, like, but also like trying really hard to be like, I'm in a death tournament and I have to do what I have to do. I just love like a sad boy with a good reason to be sad.
Plus nothing beats the whole, oh no, I am in a death tournament with my ex.
Yes, a classic trope for sure.
Yeah. We've all been there.
Who has? Yeah, right. So at one point you had mentioned story structure. And I'm really curious because, you know, a lot of books I feel these days have dual points of view. You know, in YA often, you know, the female protagonist and the male protagonist, and then we bounce back and forth between their chapters. You have obviously written something more complex than that, and we've got four characters. Do you, and I don't know, this might be getting like super nerdy plotter talk, but if you think of like major or overarching plot structure with like the inciting incident and the midpoint and the climax, etc., did you go through and like give every character a complete plot structure, or were you kind of thinking of it more as an overall story?
That's a great question. Oh no, we did.
Yeah, we absolutely did. The way that our outline wound up working is we broke it down by like the save the cat beats in a Google sheet, which
that's again, why it's so great.
And we tried to assign every beat to every character. It's not perfect. A couple of characters are missing a few, which was just inevitable because of the way that the story worked. But that it was really important to us. As Amanda said, we both love character. We wanted everybody to have a full and complete arc in the story. We didn't want it to feel like one of them was the mainest main character. They all belong there. They are all POVs for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
I also feel like as a pretty, I feel like both of us as a, I might be the more devoted plotter of the two of us, but both of us just really think of story structure and character arcs through the lens of beats like that yeah. I don't even know how we would have plotted it otherwise. Like that is just simply the lens through which I interpret pretty much all stories. Mm-hmm. That was always going to be the place where we began.
Yeah, I mean, I do as well. And I, as a reader, like I was not looking for those moments in the story, but I just kind of had this feeling like if I were to look for them, I feel that they would be there because every plot line did feel so well developed, but also wove together so neatly.
It's also, it's fun when you have, well, first of all, thank you. Oh my gosh. But it's also, it's fun when you have four of them because you get to do some inversions. Like for example, like the Dark Knight of the Soul beat is not a dark night for everyone. For some characters, it's a high, and for some characters, it's a low. You really get to play with, you can kind of get to have your cake and eat it too, with Save the Cat, which is really fun for both of us because Amanda's right, we both totally see character through that lens.
Both of us also have written multi-POV stories in the past. Christine's Devouring Grey duology has, I believe, 3 narrators in the first one and 4 in the second. Am I right about that, Christine?
Yeah, you're right. Yep. And then you have, you go from 2 to what, like 4 to like 6 in Ace of Shades?
2 to 3 to 5 in the Shadow Game series. Okay.
I overestimated a little bit.
So that definitely helped that we both had a little bit of experience to it prior, because it is really, really complicated to juggle multiple characters, just as complicated as it is kind of exhilarating, honestly.
I think we both get kind of a high off of it.
Okay, I've got one last craft question before we move on to our bonus round. Setting details. The book is just thriving with this dark, gothic, creepy vibe. And I know a lot of that comes down to these just absolutely delicious details, you know, lakes full of blood and screaming faces carved into doors. And at one point when we're in the Cursemaker shop, it mentions like the smell of moldy paper and just like all of these just wonderful details. Any tips for someone who's trying to write a horror, a gothic, a dark fantasy, just in how to achieve that kind of dark vibe?
Yeah, I would say that when it comes to your descriptions, a lot of times, at least the way that I see it, is when I have a character walk into a room, there are probably a lot of things in that room that I could describe, but I don't necessarily need to describe every single little detail. So I try to pick the details that I feel really capture a specific aesthetic. Like if I were going to design one of those photo collages type aesthetics for the book, you know, I can only pick a certain amount of images for it. That's how I sort of think of it. Like, what are the ones that I'm going to choose? What would really add to the mood? What is sort of the filter that I want to cast over everything?
Yeah, again, it's about intent, right? The same way that like every line of dialogue should have a purpose, the same way that like every scene should have a purpose, every piece of setting you describe should also have a purpose, and that purpose should serve the larger story. Setting, for me, a great setting functions like a character. It has its own motivations. It puts its own challenges in the character's path, and it like feels description-wise like a character. It's just that it's something that everybody in the world interacts with instead of one point of view. And so I think that it's really important if you want like an immersive setting to kind of try and put yourself in it, whether it's through like a playlist or like a Pinterest board. And then I think when you pair that with Amanda's tips about like looking at like, there's all these items in a room, what 3 items will evoke that mood? You wind up with like actually quite an evocative image or set of images.
I love it. All excellent advice. I am myself a huge fan of the Pinterest inspiration board. I don't know what we did before Pinterest.
Me neither.
Okay, are you both ready for the bonus round?
Yeah, let's do it.
Writing in the morning or writing at night?
I'm morning.
I would say night.
Music or silence?
Silence.
Music.
Snowy mountains or sunny beach?
Mountains.
Mountains.
Okay, you broke the pattern.
Yeah.
Spellmaker or curse maker?
Ooh.
Spellmaker. Yeah, I'd say spellmaker too.
Of the 7 landmarks in the tournament, which would you claim and why?
I'd say the castle because it's the most defensive and I am a scaredy cat.
I would say the tower. I want the high ground and I am still not out of my tangled phase.
We'll never be out of our tangled phase. Do you have any writing rituals?
I would say lately, now that my partner has been working from home for the past year and a half, I have been writing in the bedroom while he writes in the living room. And honestly, it's literally just making my bed every morning and getting my favorite blanket all set up so that I can get all curled up and cozy while I work.
I think for me, I'm like very precious about like my writing space. I've always tried to kind of carve out a writing nook in every place where that was like a possibility. And now we recently moved to a space where I actually get to have my own office, which is like a lifelong dream, and I'm so excited. So just stepping in there and like sitting down at my desk feels like a ritual, because I've like decorated it all to try and like evoke creativity, which just means that there's like a lot of like vaguely unsettling art on the walls, let's be real. But I love it.
One day.
What advice would you give to help someone be a happier writer?
Go easy on yourself. It's okay if you don't have it all figured out right now. If you feel like your book still has way longer to go to match like the thing that's in your head versus the thing that's on the page. Writing is rewriting, at least for me. And like, there's nothing wrong with taking your time. There's no expiration date.
I would say that it's important to go back and read old favorites. I personally feel like I always have a really bad memory. And so if a little while has gone by since I've read a book, even a few months or even, you know, not let alone years and years, I feel like I don't really remember it that well, but all I remember is that I really, really loved it. And going back and reading those type of books, the books that really inspired me to write, I find to be really, really grounding. And it's just a process that I've come to really appreciate and hold very precious over the years.
Well, that's a perfect segue into the next question, which is, what book makes you happy?
Oh, that's a good question.
That is a great question.
Howl's Moving Castle always makes me happy. It was my favorite book when I was a kid. It's still one of my favorite books as an adult. Rereading it is just pure joy for me.
I also have to pick a childhood favorite. My all-time favorite book is Anne of Green Gables. Both in book variety and the Anne with an E TV show, they bring me so much joy.
We kind of mentioned this a little bit already, but what are you working on next? / what can you tell us about book two?
Well, I think obviously we're both working on book two right now. Amanda's on double deadline, but she can talk about that in a second. Something that we can tell you is that while the media plays, I'd say, a significant role in book one, that fades away once the characters get into the nitty-gritty of the death tournament, but they come back in book two with a vengeance. That is a major theme, and we really, really enjoyed deconstructing that and exploring it.
In terms of what's next, I would say I actually have the sequel to my middle grade series coming out on February 1st. It's called The Weeping Tide. The first book is called The Accidental Apprentice. It came out this past year. So that's what next in the very, very like upcoming future, actually.
Oh, wait, I forgot. I have a book coming out in April. This is classic.
Amanda's please tell like, us about it.
Yeah, my next solo YA novel, The Drowning Summer, comes out in April 2022. It is a book about two Long Island mediums, both girls who fall in love while trying to solve a triple murder and also deal with some like real nasty ghosts. Yay.
All sounds epic. I'm so excited. Lastly, where can people find you?
I am on Instagram at Amanda Foodie, and I am pretty good about updating my website, which is amandafoodie.com.
And I am also on Instagram at Christine Exists. And you can also sign up for my newsletter, which is on my website, christinelynherman.com. I'm not quite as good at updating it as Amanda, but I would say I'm pretty good.
Lovely. Christine, Amanda, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having us. This was really fun.
Yeah.
Readers, definitely check out All of Us Villains. It is available now. Of course, we always encourage you to support your local indie bookstore. If you don't have a local indie, you can check out our affiliate store at bookshop.org/shop/Marissa Meyer. Next week, I will be talking with Claire Wynn about her debut science fiction YA, City of Shattered Light. If you're enjoying these conversations, please subscribe and follow us on Instagram at Marissa Meyer Author and at Happy Writer Podcast. Until next time, stay healthy, stay cozy, and whatever life throws at you today, I do hope that now you're feeling a little bit happier.